Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, hey, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, it's an easy one, February 15th, because yesterday was Valentine's Day, so it's very easy to remember.
Yeah.
Happy Valentine's Day to all the listeners and lovers. I have to say,
this nigga sound like
a Quiet
DJ.
Storm DJ.
Like, like Vaughn Harper and shit. This is to all the listeners and lovers out there. Jamming. Hey, treat your lady well, brothers. Hey, I gotta say, I'm all for love, especially. Uh-oh. Love it. Love the love.
Wait, you're breaking up, Jeffrey. That might be God trying to stop you from saying bullshit.
That's exactly.
A lot of front-ass niggas on that gram yesterday.
Oh, there it is.
It was a lot of niggas on that gram, a lot of couples on that gram that it just felt like, oh, we got to do this for the gram. Oh, bro.
Feel like this year was the first time that I saw everybody post a couple pic for Valentine's Day. Like, that was everybody's thing. Like, even if we know you're in a couple, I'm not used to everybody posting a pic of them and like their significant other. And I almost felt like a dick because I didn't do it.
This year it was like a thing.
Yeah.
More than any other year that I remember, it was definitely like a thing. Like, people are like, you know, oh, we gotta post this pic, and the captions, you know, my true love, and you know, you're my best friend forever. And again, you know, a lot of that is real. And again, I love love. So if that indeed is those people's situations, I applaud it. Yeah. I just felt like some of them on there. It was like, we posted this picture for the gram, but tonight we're gonna be fussing and fighting, and you ain't getting no pussy, and I ain't cooking shit, and you know, fuck you and your mama, and and go call your side piece, your bitch ass nigga, and you know what I'm saying. I felt like it was a lot of that going on too. I mean, maybe I'm getting too cynical.
I would actually chime in just to say, I kind of feel like that over the last maybe 2 years. There's nothing organic about social media now. Like, nothing feels organic.
It all feels staged.
Everything, man. Everything is staged. It's like, my nigga, like, you, like, people be posting like 20 pics a week. Like, my nigga, you cannot, there's nothing you're doing.
Yeah.
20 times a week that niggas need to be aware of.
It's, you're not that interested, my nigga. Seriously.
Relax. It's okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really okay.
Wait, speaking of side pieces, I need to give, first of all, happy side piece day. Actually, if you were out there playing them games, this was actually probably a good week for you, because Valentine's Day falling right on a Wednesday probably gave some people room to maneuver. Like, yo, I can't really do it. It's the middle of the week. I'm going to hit you on the weekend. Yeah, they were probably able to cover bases this weekend prior or this weekend coming. But I was blessed to discover, as were you, Sean, Pokey Bear from the 504. Uncle, I'm going to call him Uncle Pokey Bear, who is an artist of the genre of liquor house music. I think that's what they call it. That kind of like Clarence Carter, Betty Wright. Corn liquor music. They play it down at the bar that's down the street that don't have nothing in it but a couple bar stools, the juke joint, exactly that. And they have like well liquor specials, and they serve it in plastic cups. Bar.
And it's never getting robbed because it's never everybody got a pistol.
Right. Everybody got a gun. Everybody, a few of them got some warrants. The women got a pistol too. And it's where Earlene and Bob, like, Earlene stabbed Bob the other week there because Bob's other old lady was there at the same time, but then Earlene and Bob was back together. It's that space, right? So the song is called I Left Home to Be With My Side Piece. And it's actually a gem. And apparently it really is a thing in like South Louisiana and Houston. Like of it gets played at cookouts. Gets played. And not only is there that song, there is a reply to the song.
Of course it is.
With the women.
And what's and wait, like, what is the woman's name who made the reply? I need to know her actual. Is it like Tina or
like, something like that? It's like Miss Vanessa. Somebody.
Yeah, Miss Vanessa.
Let me find it. But the reply, let me be clear. I left home to be with my side piece. It sounds janky. It sounds low production. But it's a jam. It actually has like quality lyrics. It actually tells a story. Like it actually is all right. And the reply. It's even better. All these, it's three women on it. They can all sing. All of them.
They all straight like, out of the church.
They all straight out the church. And again, it's a story. It's a melody. These, like this joint got better song structure than some of the shit that's on mainstream radio. But anyway, I found out, I haven't seen this yet, but there's apparently a mini movie about the song, about my side piece.
I need that mini movie.
Starring Carly Red and Mystical.
I got to have it. Oh wait! I saw that. I saw the advertisement for that.
Yo,
that's
nigga. Where did you see?
No. I saw that. No.
Mystical movie, nigga. Hold on.
Explain, nigga. This, no. It wasn't
what African shop was you going to shop at?
You know he'd be watching TV One. No, it wasn't on TV. It was on Lipstick Alley.
It wasn't on. Yeah, it was on some shit like that. Like I saw something on the gram, and people had it was like a poster of those movie posters. I was like, oh shit, Mystical's in a flick. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I remember that. I didn't make the correlation, but absolutely. You know, but yo, I gotta say, like, for those who don't know, like, South Louisiana is just some other shit. It's like so gut bucket, Johnny Taylor, yeah. Clarence Carter, like, that shit still, that type of music is extremely relevant still in that Southwestern market. So that's Louisiana, Arkansas, yeah. Texas, Mississippi, like, that okay. Shit. Them niggas, buddy, Blue, you know, Bobby Blue Bland, all that. Them niggas make good money down there.
Well, also that dude, Bishop, what's his name? The dude that sings Hell to the No. He's from down there too, right?
Bishop Bullwinkle.
Bishop Bullwinkle. I don't know if he's from down there, but he's in that set.
I think he's from Southwest Louisiana.
So I discovered this gem. Oh, the reply is Veronica Rael, Lacey, and Miss Portia. I told you it was Miss Somebody.
Oh, of course it is.
Miss Portia. So I got put onto this gym around about 8:04 a.m. this morning, Eastern time. So that's how my day got started. And the entire
jamming
like,
it all day.
What? And people would just put me on like, you gotta, like somebody was like, go check Marvin Cease. And I was like, I know Marvin Cease. Yeah. That's candy liquor, you know, mm-hmm. And all. So,
you know,
yeah.
Marvin Cease, sidebar, Marvin Cease was on Jive.
Of course he was, because all and the police
so,
people are
and on. So was Buddy Guy.
That's hilarious.
And Millie Jackson.
So Millie Jackson.
Millie Jackson was on Jive.
I also got put on to another auntie. I'm gonna have to recall her name and her song I remember the name of the song. I'm gonna have to recall her name for the next show. But she got a song called Hey Mr. Sexy Man. Mm-hmm. And it's her and a bunch of her girls and a bunch of men, everybody's 65, everybody.
Everybody.
In the club, in the lounge, we was talking about in the bar. It ain't even a club; it's the bar. In the bar, doing line dancing, but like scoping each other out. You know, she like, I like your cologne. You know, hey, Mr. Sexy Man, what your name is? Your man, and like, it's your man in like a full suit and
of course,
a hat.
Of course,
and a whole, I'm Stacey like, Stacey Adams, Stacey, all that. All day. Her dress too tight, her gut hanging out, but she's sexy. It don't matter.
That's going to be me and Brian. That's going to be me and Brian in about 15 years.
hey, nigga, meet me down to the spot, nigga.
Hey, meet me down to the bar, nigga. All right, everybody. Come on now.
Yeah, so just shout out to that, because that just blessed my soul on this morning. That's how I got my day started. That was amazing. It was amazing.
I got one, which is a different kind of wolf. I got two actually. First of all, I felt peace to the guy who sat behind me on the plane yesterday, coming back from LA, because the man was kicking and beating on my chair like it was going out of style. And I definitely was getting irate and giving the look backs and the rolling eyes. And then I got up to go to the bathroom and look back, and your old boy had Parkinson's.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So I felt bad. So I felt bad. So
I didn't know,
but you know, and I could see he was going through it because, you know, it's a long plane ride. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I said peace to him. But I got to say peace to I'm going to call him my pastor, even though I ain't never tithed or haven't joined the church yet. But my pastor, E. Dewey Smith, who I've told y'all about, who I stream from the House of Hope in Atlanta.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched it Sunday past, and I never seen a service like this. It was actually amazing. So Pastor Dewey got, they had some kids come up early and, you know, kind of, they had, it was like a kids' day. So they were doing stuff and for the kids in church. And every week lately, he's been also having an elder of the church. They've been honoring an elder each week. Like they'll give like a whole little film presentation about their life and da 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 da. They come up and get their flowers, and that's very nice, right? So they did all that, and then Pastor Dewey hit the pulpit, and of course the choir is singing. And I'm so mad that I didn't write these songs down, but there was two songs that they kept singing, like some, you know, how God has saved me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what Pastor Dewey was going through. But like they would sing the song and they have really good choir and a really good band. Like they're great. And they sing the song and then pass, you know, of course people getting happy and all that. And then it would, you know, kind of like die down a little bit. And then Pastor Dewey would just kind of stand there and then he would start singing the song again. And of course the choir would join in. And this went on for, I swear to God, 25 minutes to a half an hour. He never preached.
He never preached.
He just kept, the song just kept coming back up and he's sitting there, you know, like crying. He was actually, you know, going through some emotions and like a half hour, he kept like bringing it. He would try to preach. He was like, okay, we're going to calm down. We're going to get to it. And he'd open up your Bibles. And he'd kind of stand there and then he'd start humming the song again and it would just go. And this went on for like a good half hour. He never did a service. That was the service. Then it went to another song, because once they finished that song, he started another song, and that went on for a good 15 to 20 minutes.
And this was supposed to be a regular church service?
This is regular. It was 11 o'clock church service, but I've never seen it.
You ain't bring the word. I've never seen a service like that either. You ain't bring the word.
Because he brings the word every week. Like it's not something that they do. But he was just caught up in the church. Got so caught up in the emotion of these two songs.
I think we lost Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff keeps freezing. Jeff, you were freezing again.
Okay, am I back now?
Yeah, you're back. Strengthen your Wi-Fi, Negro.
I know the Wi-Fi is garbage. But he just kept doing it. And then he had called to the altar, right?
Right.
And at call to the altar, of course, a lot of people come up. They keep singing the song and people are, you know, wailing and crying as we do. And then this 13-year-old girl came up for call to the altar and just was wailing like from the gut. It was like really emotional. And so the whole church like gathered around her and started praying over her. And they had a whole like 20 minutes of just praying over. First, it was a guy. I think the guy was gay. And I think he was kind of going through the fact that he couldn't, you know, maybe be himself. And they prayed over him. Then they prayed over this 13-year-old girl for another good 15 to 20 minutes, and then, like, that was the end of the service, so, like, he never actually preached, but it was just, but it still ended up being a super emotional service. I just wanted to give a shout-out to the church, because I've never seen that before. Like you said, I've never seen nobody not eventually get to the word, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, it was very, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know if I'm describing it properly, but it was pretty powerful. I just wanted to say a piece of that. But that was my shout. Any shouts, bro?
Nah, well, you know what? Shout out to my wife, Mona. Today's her birthday, actually.
Happy birthday, Mona.
Happy birthday, Mona. So, yes, yeah. Picture of her on vacation and stuff. Looking like she had a great time.
Yeah, they're having a good time. So, shout out to her. I think this might be like our first Valentine. It's weird because, you know, her birthday is obviously the day after Valentine's.
Right.
This might be like the first one in like 20 years. Like,
wow, that's wild.
Yeah.
So nigga feeling awkward right now. Like, I don't really know what to do.
Yeah, I was kind of like, hey, I ain't really got to make no reservations. So yeah, me and Jordan went out to dinner last night.
Nice. That's fly. I wanted to bring up, okay, so as the people who listen know, I've been trying to do these movie reviews leading up to the Oscars.
Oh, yeah. I watched The Shape of Water this week, too.
You know what? I got that in my queue. Would you want to talk about it? Go on, talk about it.
So The Shape of Water is kind of a, fantastical movie of sorts. It's set back during the Cold War era. Mm-hmm. And it's a woman and not Viola. What's my other girl's name?
Octavia Spencer.
Mm-hmm. Are part of the cleaning service staff in like a top secret government facility. And this woman is a mute, and they're holding kind of like a secret specimen that they went and found somewhere and brought back to study. And, you know, they're trying to keep it from the Russians and all this other stuff. And somehow this woman who's a mute falls in love with this man who's kind of like an Aquaman type thing. And it's really the story about her navigating, like, developing feelings and doing all that other stuff
for him. Did you enjoy it?
Huh?
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, it's great.
So you think it's Oscar worthy?
Yeah, I do believe so. It's just really, it's really well done, and it's really endearing.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't cry. It's not that. It's a very kind of like I said, it's endearing. It's not really sad, but it is endearing. It's very touching, and it's not even like it's a lot of really high action, but there's a lot of emotion in it, and it's just really kind of beautiful, like. It's this is gonna sound really corny, but there are certain parts of it that do feel kind of magical, but not so much that it goes all the way off the rails. So I think it's one of those things where you would be like, it's a very it's a lovely movie, it's a sweet movie. I found it really enjoyable. But I do find myself wanting to use words like sweet. Visually it's like certain shots are really beautiful. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Okay. All right, yeah. Cool. So I watched Phantom Thread. Which is a movie by Paul Thomas Anderson, who is the guy who did Boogie Nights, and he did There Will Be Blood, and he's done a couple of movies. Like, he doesn't do a lot of films, but when he does a film, The Master, and so he doesn't do a lot of films, but when he does a film, it's like a big deal. So this movie is starring Daniel Day-Lewis, and it's about this guy who's a fashion designer, which looks to be like in the 50s or 60s, and it's a really weird movie. It's beautiful. It's based in England or Paris. They don't really kind of ever say where they are, but I believe it's England or Paris. It's a beautiful film, the way it looks and everything, but it's a really strange, you know, it takes this really strange kind of twist and turn. It is a love story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he beats this girl in a restaurant. She's like a waitress, like in like an inn. It's not even a restaurant; it's like an inn, in a country inn. And you know, she takes her in, and like, you know, kind of makes her his muse because he likes the way her body is shaped. So he's able to make clothes on her, and kind of takes this weird twist towards the end. And you know, I get why the Oscar people would like it because it's, you know, it's kind of brooding and, you know, visually stunning, but. And the woman who plays the lead role, actually, she kind of reminds me of Meryl Streep. She's really dope. And of course, Daniel Day-Lewis is great, but I don't know if it'll win anything, but you know,
Meryl Streep is in The Post. I was about to say, I thought Meryl was in it, but she's in The Post.
Yeah, she's in The Post. Yeah, she is. But this woman's actually from, I think she's from Sweden or something like that, but she looks kind of like Meryl. She's actually a really great actress. It's a movie that you got to kind of be into. Like, it ain't going to be no wide. Big movie, but I enjoyed it because it got weird at the end, but I was like, oh shit, that's kind of fly, but you know, so I kind of recommend it if you're in that space, but like, right. Don't go in there like this one. So, yo, it's Saturday, let me check this out. Don't do that because you're gonna hate it.
Well, because Daniel Day-Lewis movies are always kind of like that, though. You can't just like sit down and just be like, I'm gonna watch Daniel Day in this flick.
Exactly.
Ever.
You got to be like, okay, I got myself ready to watch this shit and see where it takes me. So yeah, you know, that's it. So hey, while we since we talking movies, I mean, none of us, I don't think, have seen Black Panther yet. I'm going tomorrow night. You said you're going tomorrow. Bro, talking about now, yeah. You might go in 2 weeks because the niggas with the drums and the dashikis is irking his nerves.
Nah. That's not.
Let them niggas live, bro. Come on now.
That wasn't irking my nerves as much as, you know, look, man, I get it. I really do. But like.
There you go.
I like the movies. You know, I've talked about this before. Like, I like the experience of
going to the movies. Yeah.
Yes. I don't necessarily want to go when there's like a fucking flea market in the lobby and, you know, everybody is like doing performances. Like, I'm saying, why is that like a bad thing that I don't want to be there for that? Like I'm not saying that they shouldn't do that. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying I'm going to wait until they're not doing that.
No, what I'm saying is
that was my point.
In certain certain geographical locations, as they say, there will be more chance of getting the performances. Like where I'm going to Magic Johnson tomorrow night at 6:30. So I know it's going to be lit. I'm prepared for all the litness. I'm prepared for every bit of it. I know I'm not going to hear a lot of the movie. I'm prepared for all of it. I'm going to end up going to see it again, you know, probably maybe on Sunday or Monday where I can kind of focus on it more. But I just want the litness. But, you know, I'm sure there's certain areas you can go and you won't get the drums and the African praise dancers.
I get it. I mean, I got my tickets for Sunday.
Okay, you're good. You probably be good.
I hope so.
But all the reviews, like literally to a person, have been amazing. My son Julian actually just texted me right before we started. He went tonight because him and Amanda, him and his girlfriend are going away tomorrow. And he said it was incredible. Everybody I know who's seen it says it's incredible. So I can't wait. I've been trying to, like, duck the Twitter because, you know, I'm sure niggas is going to start slipping out spoilers real soon. But I have to say this, like, people who went to screenings and all that, I'm proud of the fact that there haven't been nobody slipping out no spoilers. Nobody's been flagrant. But I think after, like,
I see a lot of people saying that they'll wait till Sunday. I mean, I think people have so much respect for this movie and for what it means and for what it is that they don't want to ruin the experience for anybody else. And they want to make sure, and people enjoyed it and were so impressed with it. They want to make sure that people have that same opportunity. And I've honestly been just kind of avoiding even reading anything anybody's saying.
You haven't read any reviews or anything. Like, I don't even want to read a review. I want to just see it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know you didn't see it, but like, there's a documentary that just came out, like, probably within the last week. It's really new about Polo. That Complex Media did. And it's really, really well done. It's 40 minutes long. And it's really well done because the document, the history of Polo in terms of hip hop and how basically hip hop took Polo obviously to like heights and places that they never imagined taking it to. And they interviewed like all the right people. They really did. They interviewed a whole bunch of the lowlifes. I didn't know they still had those low-life get-togethers. I guess they still do.
I went to high school with somebody in South Carolina who'd be bringing his ass up here for low-life conventions. And I'd be like, nigga, you ain't even grow up here. What the fuck are you? Where's your... You got a wife and two kids and a whole job, and you coming to Brooklyn for a fucking low-life photo shoot on the Brooklyn Bridge with a polo bear towel over your head. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
He might have been in that doc because these niggas is grown in that doc. It ain't no kids in this doc. These niggas is 40 plus.
Yeah.
Some look like 50 plus.
That nigga using his PTO to come up here.
right. Don't you got a daddy daughter dance? You got to take that kid to something. Why are you in Brooklyn, my nigga? Like, what are you doing? It's crazy.
You know that polo. Like, you know that polo lifestyle. That polo lifestyle is dead ass serious. Like
it is. And you know, I wasn't even really up on low life. Shout out to Bolo. Until I worked at Columbia, and there's a radio. Is he a low life? Well, yeah, because his name is Gary. He's Bolo. That's what the low comes from.
Oh, that's where the low comes from. Oh, I didn't
yeah, and I okay. didn't. So I wasn't even up on low lives right like that. And when I found out about it, somebody was Bolo's. That's why he's a low. He's Bolo. He's a low life. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw that this dude I'm talking about from home was posting polo gear on his Facebook page every 10 seconds. But then I just read up on it a little bit. But it's just, I mean, Bolo ain't crazy with it like that. He does rock polo all the time, but he's not out there like, you know, really repping. Well, you like know,
just,
like that.
Well, like, you know, Just Blaze and the producer 88 Keys, like, they don't wear anything else, ever. Any time you see Just Blaze or 88 Keys, they're wearing polo head to toe every time, down to their drawers. That's like, they literally don't wear any other garment but polo. And there's a lot of lowlifes that are like that, yeah. You know?
You know, I liked the documentary. I thought it was interesting.
Did you know any of them cats?
No, those cat, like low lives are a little older than me. So that's why I kind of laughed when you said 40, cause them niggas is closer to 50. If we being real, cause them niggas was, them niggas was like young adults in 86 and 87.
Yeah. You know, just real. Yeah.
So they close, they around the corner from 50. But yeah, I mean, listen, low was always coveted, obviously. You know, my first real memory of polo really being coveted was if you got the vest with the ski man on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you, like, nigga, you was so fresh. If you have 40 polos and you had that vest with the ski man on the back, nigga, you was it.
He's killing them.
Killing them. So, yeah. I mean, that was sort of my first introduction. Now, what I really loved about polo and what I still love about polo is that actually, like, they're one of the last real American companies, right? Like, in terms of American design. And so what I find is being a dude that's pretty big, like, I'm 265 pounds. There's not a lot of clothing that fits me properly, that doesn't look huge and big or too tight.
Boxy and shit, yeah.
And so what I found is that my go-tos are consistently Ralph Lauren and Brooks Brothers. Those are really the two that really kind of always make that sort of American cut. So he's still prominent. They make incredible, you know, gear. I mean, it's from the affordable to the made to measure. I mean, you can run the gamut. And like a lot of those guys are really collectors. And what I really loved about it was that you can tell they had a real passion for the collection. It wasn't just about flipping it. It was like they had shit that they didn't even really realize they had, it looked like. Like, there's no way Just Blaze has an inventory of what he owns. No way.
Yeah.
Unless somebody came in and like wrote down and documented everything, he doesn't know what he has in that closet.
Because he had a whole walk-in closet and mad bags on the floor, and he said that was just one section.
Yeah. Like, come on, man. Come on. So it was, you know, again, man, it was very interesting. I really kind of liked the way they juxtaposed it with Tommy and how Tommy made a decision and made a conscious effort to sort of cater to hip hop, whereas Ralph Lauren never really did in an overt way, but they did in a covert way. You know, the logos got bigger, the colors got brighter, the clothes fit differently. You know, my mom used to work in B. Altman.
And
So I used to get polo. She would get her employee discount. So that was what that shit wasn't cut for me. I was always in the Husky department. That shit was never really cut for me. So, and it was always sort of like, you know, you'd get the fashion, you know, fly shit, but it was really like, you know, very basic sort of, you know, clothes. It really wasn't like super duper. So up until like 92, so from like, you know, around that time, you know, the logos got crazy. The fit got crazy. It was big. It was baggy. Yeah. It was just everything. Yep. It was catered to hip hop without
They emphasized the jeans a little more. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You know all that stuff. Outerwear became a real thing for them. Like, outerwear, mm-hmm. like, you could get a coat, but it wasn't like you didn't have multiple designs, you know, every season and different levels. Like, you might get a coat that was on a lower end. It might be $200 for a polo coat. And the real super-duper fly shit might be $1,500.
Exactly, exactly. And they talked about that in the doc, like the different levels. And one of the many things about the doc that I appreciated was, like, just like the volume that Ralph has created. Like, he's so many designs, like it's so much shit. Like, it's like, yo, look at these jackets. I never seen that shit. Like, they had a thing last night, you saw, like, on 42nd Street when they were all gathered, where they dudes would get, like, in the middle and, like, break out the shit. Like, y'all ain't got this. You know what I'm saying? You just remember the dude when they oohed over that guy's sweater?
Yeah.
That sweater was mean as hell. I was like, I never seen that before. That shit was incredible. Now, I like how they went to Atlanta and talked to Farnsworth and Dro and the polo guys down there. Like, I just highly recommend it. And they had footage of them, like, fucking boosting. That was crazy.
Well, yeah.
When they was taking whole racks out the store.
I kind of felt like that was a big part of why no one from Ralph Lauren really maybe participated in this. Yeah. It's because they didn't want to necessarily almost kind of co-sign.
The fact that people were stealing this shit?
Well, and kind of the element that it brought. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, yo, like, niggas was really getting hurt for polo. For real. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
If you was on that A train, my nigga, and you was by yourself and you didn't have a hammer with you, you was getting kicked.
Yeah. And they talked about that in the doc. But again, just wanted to mention that because I just thought it was really well done. Have either one of you seen the Chris Rock special?
Yeah, I did. I watched it last night.
You watch it now?
No, not yet.
Okay. It was interesting because, and bro, tell me what you think about it, because I thought it was good. I thought it was funny and topical, but it was a lot of parts where I wasn't laughing, and I wasn't laughing because I didn't think it was funny. It was just like, I was more just enjoying what he was saying. I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting and introspective. It wasn't like some deep shit. He was being funny. And again, I thought it was very funny, but like, it was almost like, you know, I've always liked to watch comics, even from when I was a kid and I would stay up late and watch, like, you know, Johnny Carson. I've always kind of like watch comics and how they move and how they flow and they different styles or whatever. And to me, I was almost like watching Chris, like, oh, this nigga's really like mastered his style. Like, he had that shit, that style, that his thing. He wasn't doing a lot of that yelling shit like that he does sometimes. Like, he was just like in his pocket, man. Like, I was like, this nigga is really the G of this shit right now. I enjoy it. What'd you think about it?
I liked it, man. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really dope because it sort of, it was a smaller venue. It looked like he might have been at, like, maybe Brooklyn Academy of Music or something like that. It looked like it was a small theater versus.
It wasn't Barclay.
Well, yeah. Well, like I say that because this was, it's called the All Black Tour, I think is what these specials are going to be coming from. And he's basically up there in a pair of sneakers, a pair of black jeans, and a black t-shirt, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I thought was interesting was that I really started to view him as an artist in a little bit of a way, because he kind of went from, you know, these really tailored suits and these massive arena shows to a much more intimate venue, intimate for him anyway, and toned down. And he talked about that. I mean, to me, the best part of this stand-up was probably about the last 20 to 25 minutes in which he really talked about his divorce. He talked about his hang-ups. He talked about some of the issues that he faced. I didn't agree with everything. I understood his train of thought with everything, but I didn't necessarily agree with it and co-sign it. And like you said, I didn't find myself belly laughing, but I definitely got the point. And I think that's where he's changed as a comic as well, right? Like he's
Somebody told me it was a little. This is like a milder Chris Rock kind of.
Yeah, it was to some degree, because he's, you know, the content is still the content with him, right? But you get the sense that this is a man that has had a fight. And He didn't get up. He didn't get up as fast as he thought he would.
Yeah, he didn't really. I don't think he actually even really won the fight per se. Well, it's kind of like a draw,
And I think that, all of those things sort of come out. You know, he says some really telling things. And you know, in my opinion, he leaves a few things out that I kind of was like, okay, I mean, I get it. But you know, talking about his addiction to porn, talking about his divorce in much more detail. And I think he was almost put in a position to where he kind of had to come clean about the infidelity because it was just out there.
It was out there so much.
It was out there. So this was a way to really sort of take the power away from it. You sort of address it, you know, it sounded like this was therapeutic for him. It sounded like he was, you know, really exploring this shit for real.
Exactly.
And not just a dude who said, I'm sorry and I fucked up, but somebody who really was digging into to what they did and what
and
was
why, and why they
and
did
why
it.
They did it. Exactly. Yeah.
Honestly, it sounded almost like a dude like who might have did some therapy.
Yes, absolutely. It's very much this might have been his 444.
Yeah, that's exactly what this was. It literally was his 444. Like it's like I said, it's very introspective, and he's still on his game. And again, by no means is it not funny, because it is, but it's just like I said, it's way more introspective than you know, and it's not, you know what it is too. It wasn't as some of his stuff sometimes tends to be a little angry.
Yeah,
like. If this wasn't angry, it was just like...
Yeah, he does tend to sound angry.
Let me say, he wasn't angry in the traditional way that we've seen him be, but I did not get the feeling that he wasn't upset in how that divorce played out, right? Like, he takes responsibility for it. He doesn't shy away from that. Right. But the process in which it occurred, the process in which it happened, and the fact that it happened, right? Like the fact that he had to go there and basically fight for his children, right? Like that's what you can hear a man that is really mad. Like he's not okay with that shit. Like fuck the money. I don't think the money is whatever. But I think that more than anything, I think the fact that she, you know, basically attempted to, you know, take, full custody. Like, basically, he was just going to be a fucking weekend visitation dad.
Every other weekend type. He's like, fuck is he talking about? Because he talks about how when they broke up, he bought a house literally around the corner from his house so he could be super close to his kids and see them every day, and he still had to go to court and work out visitation, and the court was like making him like prove that he had a place for them to proper place for them to stay and prove that they had food in the house, and he's like, I'm fucking, what are you talking about?
That's
like $100 million. Like, what are you talking about? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, so you know, but you said, like Sean said, it was like it almost kind of like it knocked him down a couple pegs, like, yeah, you still a nigga.
Well, you know what though, man? I also found that, let me say this, I found it very interesting, right? Because when he said that, I'm like, you know that, you know, Tony, not his brother, but just a regular nigga named Tony, like, you know, like right. Tony who works.
Tony Jenkins.
Jenkins who works at the Target, nigga, like, he has to do shit like this. Like, a regular nigga, right? Like, that's. It was almost like it didn't matter that you was Chris Rock, and he was almost offended by the idea that someone would question him. Now I get that as a dad and as a provider, and he comes from a very traditional home. Obviously, we've all seen the show. Everybody knows Chris. You know, he comes from a traditional home. The man got up. He went to work and he got the big piece of chicken. That's just been a part of his act for years.
Right.
So he said that. For him, it was almost like, how fucking dare you? Right. But like, yo, man, like, welcome to the fucking real world, dude.
Because
niggas going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And niggas are going through that who ain't got no money and they can't really afford
they
a
ain't
lawyer.
Got three lawyers,
none of that
dude.
Shit.
They ain't got three lawyers. Yeah. And I'm not saying that to dismiss to dismiss his feelings of how he felt. I'm just saying that, you know, it sounded like the first time he had real perspective about how shit really worked when you were outside of that insulated Hollywood bubble world.
Right.
Where everything is fucking handed to you.
Yeah. Also, exactly.
I mean, not to judge, but I don't know if you guys remember this, but I was actually surprised that Chris was married as long as he was married, because I think like on two separate occasions there were stories that what's her name? Malak, whatever her name is, that she had filed for divorce. Wait, I'm echoing. What did you do, Jeff?
I just pulled my mic out. 1 second, I didn't get my plug.
Okay. But there were reports that she had filed for divorce, or they were separating and then reconciling and whatever. So I never got the sense that that was a particularly happy marriage.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, she was very early on in their marriage. It was very Meet the Blacks and, you know, this great black family. And this was a very, you know, she was a...
she went to Howard. She's an educated woman. She's great on paper.
Also, she was very active. She was very vocal. She was very much out there. She was socializing. She was out at events.
They were together a lot.
They would, you would see that all the time. She was very much out there. She was sort of creating a path for, you know, herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like the first whispers, like you said, I think that they, you know, they ran into some speed bumps and some roadblocks and she kind of disappeared from that. Like, she fell all the way back. And I don't think you've seen her in the last maybe 6 years.
Yeah, like, I don't even think she was around when Chris was doing Good Hair promo and his daughters were involved with that. Like, I literally can't remember the last time I saw him and her together. Like, at all.
I haven't even seen her. So, I mean, it seems like a... Listen, I also say that with the understanding that it is not an easy road for a woman to have to go back and navigate a space knowing that not only did her husband cheat on her, right, but that she's also like the fodder and the material for his show, right? Like, that's a lot to sort of take. And I get it. You know what I'm saying? That's a lot to stomach outside of your insulated circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I recommend people watch it. You know, it's a good special. Like I said, it's topical. It's very interesting. And, you know, you kind of see like a side of Chris Rock that you'll kind of get to see a little more introspective, you know? I also wanted to mention this. I just thought it was interesting, this story about Blake Griffin. So Blake Griffin was an NBA basketball player, recently got traded from the Clippers to Detroit.
Yeah.
There was a story about him on TMZ saying that his baby mother, for lack of a better term, is suing him for abandoning her and their two children. So they were together off and off 8 years. They have two kids. They were engaged at one point. They called the wedding off last year. And then Blake jumped immediately started dealing with Kendall Jenner. Mm-hmm. And Bryn, was obviously pissed off and saying like he breached all these promises and how dare he just leave, you know, her and the mother of his kids with Kendall Jenner. And she, like I said, she's suing, she put the lawsuit up on yesterday, on Valentine's Day. But I just thought it was interesting because, you know, they're not married. And they're off and on for 8 years. So I don't know if the common law thing will stand since they've been off and on. And can you really just sue a motherfucker because, you know, rightly or wrongly, and I'm definitely not taking this side because I don't know what the parameters are, but like he decided to get with another girl. I don't know. How does that work?
I don't know that you can't sue him for leaving you. I would assume. I'm not a lawyer.
That kind of seems like that's what she's done, though.
No, here's the thing. These are sort of the caveats and the nuances, right? Like, where was she living? And if she doesn't have means of income, how was she paying those bills? Because if he was footing the bills, right, like, she might be able to say, like, yo, you basically abandoned us with no heads up. This has been my source of income. This is how I'm basically tending to these children.
Like, well, also, they were engaged, so... Depending, I don't know California law, but in some states, that's considered like entering in a contract. So she might, I mean, depending on whether she had one of the kids after they were already engaged, she could argue, you know, like she has a little bit of a case potential.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of shit that, you know, where are they located? Where, you know what I'm all saying?
Right. Like, we're definitely in LA, so.
Did they have an agreement? Is this agreement papered? You know.
Well, apparently he broke the engagement off because she wouldn't sign a prenup or something like that.
I mean,
but you guys hear that part?
He signed the contract. If that is the case, I mean, he signed the contract in June just passed for $173 million. Like, we got to sign something.
Right.
That's a lot of bread. That's not including, because he does a lot of commercials and stuff too. That's not including the off the court shit. He makes a lot of money. Like, we can't just go freestyling with basically the, you know, 200 something million dollars
in a community state.
Nah, fam. Yeah. We can't do that. Come on, huh?
I mean, also too, and listen, I don't know either of them. I definitely don't know this woman. But again, a lot of there's a ton of attorneys that are really just nice suit wearing ambulance chasers. That's all they do. Mm-hmm. This is what they do. And what they do is they take women like this who are in vulnerable states, who are in emotional states. And they give them all of these scenarios in which they can come out on top. And they tell them how they can do this and what we need to do in the press and what you need to ask for. And all of this shit is based on the contingency and the fact that this person is probably going to have to pick up the lawyer's fees, right? So they're going to bleed this shit as much as they can. And if she walks away with, you know, a couple thousand dollars a month, which she has two children, she's going to walk away with something. She's not going to be penniless, guys. Like,
well, she's going to be good.
Nigga, like, she's not going to be penniless. She will be okay. I promise you, she will not be looking for a roommate on Craigslist. She will not be, you know.
She's going to drive a 2011 X6.
Exactly. Like, none of that shit. She's not looking at the price of a gallon of milk. She's just shopping. Yeah. Like, she going to be all right. And I'm not crying no tears.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, just kind of looping back again to the Chris Rock thing. That was another thing he said. He said at one point, to your point, he said at one point he looked around the court and he was like, yo, everybody in this court is getting paid off of this except me. The lawyers and everybody, like everybody's eating except me. I'm walking out of here. I'm the only one walking out of here down.
Yeah.
Everybody else is going to go home with, like, yo, I just got paid. He said everybody wakes up that morning saying, how much money am I going to make off this nigga today, you know?
Yeah.
So to your point, you're right. Like, it's the lawyers stretch it out in the ambulance chase and they make it messy because, you know, it pads their pockets. It keeps their kids in private school.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so I just wanted to mention that because I just thought it was an interesting case. Did you see any TV this week? Y'all see Grown-ish?
Yeah, I watched Grown-ish.
Yeah, what'd y'all think?
I thought it was very interesting, especially speaking about, because these kids are, I guess technically they're Gen Z. They're not even millennials, the kids in the show. And them just being so connected.
Because y'all just turned 18. Like,
right.
Y'all just turned 18 like a week ago or something like that?
Yeah, last week. So they're Gen Z. Well, first let me say about Grown-ish. The first couple of episodes, I liked it, but I wouldn't have said I was invested in it. And I'm still not like rushing to watch it in real time, but I do see it on DVR and be like, oh, let me watch Grown-ish. And I like it. I like it a lot. And yeah, sometimes Yara feels a little flat. Sometimes a lot of them feel a little flat, but that's kind of how kids are right now.
Like, yeah, I was about to say, that's how a lot of kids are.
Yeah, they're flat and disaffected. I really like Chloe and Hallie. I had no idea they had personalities and were like, this is going to sound so fucked up. But I thought they were like hipster Brooklyn black girls. I didn't know they were like real black girls. That doesn't sound bad. I don't want to say real black girls.
I don't think that sounds bad.
You know what I mean?
If you looked at the way they were marketed and rolled out, you wouldn't think that they'd be on this show cursing and talking
cursing
shit
and popping like and snap, you know, and being with, like, they're witty, they're snappy, they're sardonic. Like, I love them. Like, I love them. I'm still not necessarily going to buy their music, but I really fuck with them. Like, they're my favorite part of the show. Them and, and the black and Asian kid. Yeah, and Luca. So, but no, I really enjoy it. I really, you know, I think the Teen Vogue tie-in had been teased starting with Black-ish. So we knew that was coming. That's a great look. It's a great tie-in, even though Elaine...
It's like free advertising.
Yeah, even though Elaine just left the magazine, though.
Yeah, like I know. A great look for her that she was in the show.
Totally.
Yeah.
And was in the show as the EIC. So, no, I like it, and I think it's dope. Mm-hmm. I thought the breakup episode, which I think was the week before last, was really good. That was really good.
Yeah, when she wouldn't get out to leave the room and all that shit.
Right.
What'd you think about it, bro?
Yeah, I liked it, man. I thought it was timely. I mean, obviously having a kid in college, these are kind of the things that you understand about that generation. I thought it was great to sort of see how easy a very simple thing, like just I'm going to take a quick picture and you think everything is okay, except it's absolutely not okay. Yeah. Right? Like, and how quickly that shit can snowball and how quickly, you know, being popular can turn around on you. So I thought it was interesting. I mean, listen, like I'm kind of in the boat with Nah. Like, I don't really watch the show live. I watch it on DVR, maybe within a day or so. And I kind of feel the same way. I absolutely did not. I wish those girls had shown just a smidge of personality when they were doing this music stuff, because they're actually really good.
I mean, they're still doing music, but they just did a new song, and that song still feels like that same earthy stuff they were doing before. And I'm like, y'all need to be popping it. Like, come on, what's up? Like,
y'all need to get a Metro Boomin beat or some shit.
Y'all need to be really practicing who they are.
Yeah,
I don't even think I'd ever heard these chicks speak. You know, I thought they were like all quiet and whatever. And I'm like, oh shit, like they're really like funny and interesting. And you can't act that, but so much. Right.
I
really like the cast that they've put around the Zoe character, mostly because I just don't necessarily think she's that great. Like, alone, she doesn't captivate me when she's on the screen.
She needs the people around her.
Yes. And so they've done a great job. I really like the show, and I like that it is not an extension of Black-ish. That it really is.
It's its own thing.
Yes, it's its own thing. I do find it very, very interesting, though, that she seems to be totally disconnected from her family in a weird way for someone who's a freshman at college.
And there's phone calls and all that.
There's nothing.
They had her mom was on. Her mom was on last week, and
let me specify.
Oh, okay.
Her dad. Because the fact that they had this incredible buddying relationship, and then for like three episodes, she's going out with the number one player in the country. Like, Andre never calls. He never mentions anything. He never... It was kind of glaring to me. But, I mean, listen, maybe I'm nitpicking. It is what it is.
I get that. They do do some promos, and I wonder if that has something to do with the demo for the show. Right. Is having cool, fashiony Tracy on more interesting than for these kids who watch the show than having Anthony Anderson on? But they do promos in between the episodes that's like Chloe texting with various members of her family. It'll be on the Grownish Instagram account.
I didn't know that.
It's kind of like watching like a screen record. So they'll do it with her texting with her dad. They'll do it with her texting with her mom. They'll do it with her texting with Jack. You know, like they did it with her texting with Jack, and Jack was like, "How's Cash?" And she was like, "Me and Cash broke up." You know, like that type of thing. So I think they try to keep that as a through line as well as a promo.
Okay, I just followed the daggone account. I didn't even think to follow the Grownish Instagram account. Yeah. I'm sure. All right, well, shit. Thanks, Nah.
But the other thing I really did like about this last episode was none of it was too heavy-handed, but just the nod to, like, trolling or just, you know, trying too hard to be too woke and, you know, fucking around and posting links without reading them. Just how quickly, like you said, how quickly things can go left, not even just with the picture, but with, like, anything.
And I they said a little thing which was slick, but it was true. It was the one of her friends was talking. She was like, "Yeah, the Donald Trump trolled his way into the White House, and he was
right.
Yeah, he actually, she said it. I kind of was like, oh, yeah.
He absolutely did.
You know, and then, again, looping back to Chris Rock one more time, he also said something interesting about Trump, which was Chris was talking about how, you know, people now, kids are, you know, everybody gets a medal and everybody, you know, is gets, you know, Valentine. Everybody kind of gets.
Oh, shit. We lost Jeff.
Oh, shit.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my Wi-Fi's wife. And Chris Rock was talking about how they're trying to fight so hard to take bullying out of school. And he said some interesting shit. He said, well, that now we're in a space where, like, a bully showed up and bullied his way into a White House, and nobody knew what to do about a bully because we're so, you know, we're like, so, like, bullying is bad that when a bully actually shows up, nobody knows how to combat it.
Right. Like,
it's kind of true, because all Trump is doing is bullying and punking people left and right, and nobody seems to kind of step up and be like, shut the fuck up. Like, nobody comes back at him.
And when you're like, yo, he's an actual terrible person, instead of people want to talk about his behavior, they're like, well, wait, can we really call him a terrible person? Is that fair to call? So people are more concerned with, like, what people are saying about people than what people are actually doing to other people.
Exactly. It's actually happening.
And that does come from that whole everybody gets a metal ass personality. No, some of y'all motherfuckers lost. Some of y'all ain't good. Some of y'all are not good at what you're trying to do.
Yep.
Some of y'all don't belong in the room.
And move out the way. Character. It builds character.
It does.
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so I thought those were those kind of Trump things in both in Chris's thing and in Groening's were very interesting because at the core of it, that is the problem. You let this guy troll himself into the White House, and he's bullying everybody, and nobody knows how to handle a bully. So they just acquiesce and go along whatever the bully says, no matter how fucking idiotic it is, because you're scared to kind of – nobody's stepping up to him, you know? So it's interesting. So we got to talk about this Florida shit. To be honest with you, I haven't even really engaged myself, and the reason I haven't is because not because I don't feel bad for the kids or for what happened.
It's too much.
It's like, you know, we've seen this story. We saw it. You know, recently with the Las Vegas thing. You know, and other shootings, and nothing changed. It's the same shit. People get on the news. You know, they go on Bill Maher. They're going to Sunday morning shows, Joy Reid, whatever, and they'll pitch a bitch about gun control, and this is fucked up, and how can this happen, and blah, blah, blah. And they'll put out the psychological evaluation of the guy, and he was this, and he was that.
Congress will send thoughts and prayers and say this isn't the time to discuss gun control, or say it's a mental health issue, not a gun control issue. Which is happening again. Yeah, it's a formula. It's a complete formula.
So I've chosen not to participate in the formula. You know,
it's hard though, because I realized that like you, I wasn't really engaging in it, but also to a certain point, again, I feel horrible, but I have a block up. Like I just won't let myself. Every time I've turned to something and the news is on about that, I've turned the channel. And it's just, and it's not for lack, like you said, it's not for lack of empathy or sympathy or horror or disgust or just real sadness. It is just a kind of thing of like, I can't do this again. You know, it's just going to be the same thing it always is. And it's just the fact that it's so disgusting. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so disgusting and disappointing in the state of our country. I mean, again, like you were talking about, this whole everybody gets a medal spirit. Like, that's America in a nutshell. We love to run around saying we're number one. The only thing that the United States leads in right now is mass incarceration and gun and mass shootings. Like, that's it.
Wow.
That's not education, not science, not even like, I don't know. You tell me, Sean, if I'm wrong. Like, I don't even think in terms of any kind of industry or anything like that right now. Like, we not out here killing it. Like,
I mean, we definitely aren't. Well, we are literally, but
Right.
Well, just to give a little, if you guys have been under a rock of the last few days, down in Florida, there was a mass shooting at a high school. A 19-year-old named Nicholas Cruz basically walked into the school and started firing off an AR-15.
Which is the same rifle that's been in the Vegas joint. I think Sandy Hook. I think Pulse. I think it's been the rifle and everything, which nobody needs for anything at all.
Yeah.
Domestically.
And so he basically walked in, started firing. A lot of the kids, people obviously were calling 911. A lot of the kids were using their cell phones to contact relatives, to let them either know that they were safe or, just to say, I love you. Some of those conversations were screen grabbed and shown, and it was just really heart wrenching. You know, you're basically looking at the words of a terrified 14-year-old.
Yeah, right? that might die,
right? Like you're watching a teenager make peace with the fact that he might die right now.
And see, that's part of why I can't follow the news. Not to cut you off, Sean, but that's part of what I can't really deal with either, is that they have all these students doing interviews, they're showing the text messages, they're showing the footage from inside the room. And some part of me feels like, yes, there's a need to report, but the shit just happened yesterday. Like, some of it feels almost like a violation.
No, it doesn't. You know? It's not even like a violation. It's an absolute violation. There is no sense. Listen, we have created this incessant need for content. And with that incessant need for content, that 24-hour news cycle, they will go to anything that's moving, right. The needle. It doesn't matter if the moral, it doesn't matter if morally you should say, let me not do this right now. Like, it literally doesn't matter, because you know what? If one station doesn't do it, another station will. And that's just how this game is played. And unfortunately, they're using children, right? Like, and so, again, like I said, I tweeted before, look, when that man massacred those babies in Connecticut.
And Sandy Hook.
And Sandy Hook, and nothing changed. Like, literally nothing changed. I knew that was when I said, this is never going to end. This is never going to stop. Yep. This will increase. And, when I look at the way this is being framed, I read a piece in the Times, and it was so apologetic, and it was so empathetic to this kid, as if he deserved any sort of empathy.
Man, fuck that kid.
And there are reports now that he was basically taking training with some sort of militia right-wing group called RFO, Republic of Florida, something like that, whatever it is. I mean, and we've always said this. Listen, once you guys get out of Miami, you in the fucking south of Georgia, man.
Right.
Yeah. You in Florida. You know what Absolutely. I mean? Like, you're in Confederate territory, okay? They Absolutely. Sort of fucking string you up. Don't get it twisted.
Right.
Unless you a linebacker that can run a 4-4,
yeah, and play for the Gators,
or play for the Gators. Right. Yeah, your ass is meatloaf. Don't get it twisted. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, none of these things are surprising. You are absolutely at a loss for words, very literally, right? Because you feel like you're repeating yourself. This is like you're saying the same shit over and over and over again.
Over and over again.
And it's like it's falling on deaf ears.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
They've made the commitment. Listen, in New Jersey, this kid was 19. A 19-year-old kid bought an assault rifle. And in that same state, he could not go into a liquor store and legally buy a bottle of gin. And the fact that fuck federal gun regulations. This is about just basic state regulations. This is about the basic need for just math. Like, we don't trust you enough to drink, but we're going to give you a fucking assault rifle?
An AR-15.
In New Jersey, in order to get a license for a firearm, there are, first of all, you have to fill out an application. You have to then give consent in said application for them to basically check your mental records, They can go and, right. and search for your mental health records. You have to fill out, and you have to also, one of the questions that's asked is, have you been accused or have you ever been arrested for domestic violence? Right. After you fill out this myriad of paperwork, you have to provide your social security, you have to provide your driver's license. You then right. have to go to a third party. You go to that third party and where you're fingerprinted. You then take your package and you go back down to your municipal. Like this, the process is painstaking enough.
To it like should be. Rip,
but my point is, it's not easy. It's designed for this to not be so impulsive. You have
right,
to do,
right.
you have to, there's so many loopholes. I mean, so many rings of fire you have to jump through.
Right.
So that you are not doing this in an impulsive way. You cannot right. just walk in there.
You can't just go to a gun show and be like, let me get these five guns and roll out.
Even when you go to the gun store, they take your card, they call back. They call right. and check on the card. Like it's yeah. not like you can't just go in there, yo, here, go take my card and go do X, Y, and Z. All of that shit is registered. All of that shit is noted. You gotta right. then you have to take the firearm that you purchased. You have to take that paperwork back to the municipal police department. You have to tell them.
Yeah. Like
right.
that's fair. That's
not, it is fair. Like, I mean, the thing that these gun enthusiasts don't get is like, nobody is saying y'all can't have your little deer rifles and all that bullshit, but there is no living animal that requires that you have a military grade assault rifle. Like, for
nothing.
What?
Nothing.
They've been hunting since forever. Okay.
Right.
They've been hunting since forever.
So okay, rifle, get your little BB, get a Glock. Shit, I don't care. That's the thing, right? Somebody hit you with a handgun, there's a chance that you're gonna survive. Somebody come at you with a assault rifle, first of all, they don't even have to get that close. Second of all, they might take you out and whoever's next to you because that bullet can go right through you. Like, mm-hmm. There's no chance. Yeah.
And they got the magazines that could fire like 30 rounds a second. Like, you're getting just, blown to bits, basically, you know?
And, what's unfortunate for me as a parent and, as a parent of kids in school is that, you drop your kid off at school, right? But now, like today, your kid is going off to school and you almost have this sense of detachment, right? Because you can get so emotionally wound up.
That you don't want your kid to go to school.
Yeah, and it's just like, you can't really do that. You kind of in this position where it's like, if this happens at my kid's school, she's really on her own.
Yeah,
like,
and that's one.
She's on her own. She has.
That's one of the things that really, one of the things that I did see, and it was at that point where I was like, I can't watch this anymore. One of the teachers was saying they had been through like school shooting training. Like they had
like
been
drills
through
and shit.
Yeah.
The fact that like when I was in school, we were doing fucking tornado drills and like putting a book over
fire
our head
drill.
And getting up against the wall. Yeah. The fact that like this is a normal thing now that school students are doing drills in case somebody comes into your school and starts shooting. That is crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They have first responder training. They've done at the high school, like during the summer when the kids are not there, active shooter training that they'll have the police department come in at the local high school. And, today they had a couple of the, cops there from the town, and he had a couple of, I guess, local reporters at the school. But like, what was scary, the scariest thing to me is that it was like a normal day.
It was regular. Yeah.
It was regular. Like
nobody was even tripping.
They're not even tripping on this shit no more. They're not even, obviously it's affecting them, but they're desensitized at fucking 13 and 14 and 15 years old, man, to death and mayhem and carnage that is very real. Like, they know this ain't no video game.
Right.
And I mean, I'm lucky that my
kids go to a school. But it's normal now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky my kids go to a school that they've really, you know, the security is really good there. Right. They take that shit really seriously. And, I mean, I'm glad for that. I mean, it's a big school. It's 2,200 kids in that school. It's a huge campus. So, I mean, I'm just, I mean, as a parent, man, this shit is mind blowing.
Right. Well, somebody mentioned today when Columbine happened, how big a story it was, how long it was in the news cycle, and the fact that we followed those kids as a nation, like, stories kept going back to check in on those kids all the way until they graduated, that graduating class. And now these joints are like this is the eighth, this is the 18th mass school shooting this year. And I didn't even know that.
Now the narrative this shooting is now turned from the shooting to what Trump said about them. So that is back on, like, with, oh, he, I can't believe he said this and he's that. And, like, the victims and the people who got shot and everything. And now, like, already 24 hours in, they're fading to the background 24 hours in.
Like, the Vegas story was gone in, like 4 days. And I remember being like, holy shit, they're not even talking about Vegas anymore. Like, that's crazy.
Yep, we didn't see no Vegas funerals. We didn't see nothing. It was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
On to the next. You know, I also just think it's wild that this guy, I guess people saying that he was wiped by birth. But he was adopted by an Asian family. By a Latin family with the last name of Cruz.
The father apparently he was adopted, and then the father died a few years afterward. Apparently this kid has had issues. Long-standing issues. Neighbors have said that they've seen, basically, there's a cop car in their driveway every week.
Really? Because he's wilding.
He was out here wilding. And they said, you know, I mean, listen, kids lose their fathers every day, B. I don't know what to tell you with that. But also, too,
that'll give you the license to wild out.
When I looked at the spelling of his name, the Nicholas name, it was very, that's a European spelling.
You're right.
That's not a Christian. It's like a Russian Catholic
spelling. Right.
Yes. Yes. So, I don't know. He has a brother named Zachary. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, say anything too crazy here because I just don't know. We're still finding things out. But apparently the kid has had a history of wild, erratic behavior. He's been expelled from school. He didn't graduate. He's 19 years old. Apparently he went to a special needs school at some point as well. And you know, kids like that are sort of prime targets for these groups. He's a young white man. He's wayward. He's looking for
someone isolated
and isolated, and he's willing to do extreme shit.
Yep. And also what's wild to me is on Twitter, the kind of like, you know, MAGA Twitter is turning the narrative to the FBI knew and they didn't do anything. Like, the FBI is whack because obviously, like, you know, they mad at the FBI because all the stuff that's happening with Trump. So again, they're just using the killing of kids as a way to politicize and say politicize their hate against the FBI. Yeah, it's crazy,
this is why I mentioned the Florida shit and him buying a gun at 19, right? Because even the FBI basically have already come out and said they were basically given a warning from a YouTube comment. They were not able to identify that the name was under that, but they couldn't identify that person. Okay, that's fair, right? Like, the FBI just can't just say, you know, the guy on YouTube named Sean Young said, "I'm gonna kill every motherfucker in here," and they just come, and, you know, and
right,
they're doing the mic,
right? Exactly.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's foolishness, man. So, last thing I want to just say before we go, and I know this is for you, bro. This one for you. You ready?
Yeah. What's that?
This week we got the Obama paintings.
Yeah.
I forgot about this already.
Yeah. So, oh my God, I was wrong of the painters. Khadij Wiley, I believe, is the man who painted Obama's President
His name
Obama's
is Kehinde. His name is Kehinde
Wiley.
This old nigga here.
Yeah, you know me. What the boy? Kenny Wiley.
His name KJ. KJ Wiley.
My boy named Kevin. His mama named Kevin Wiley. He made us an African name. And what is the woman's name who painted Michelle's
poem? I think is it Amy? What's her name? Hold on.
I definitely want to acknowledge.
Hold on one second. Okay. Yeah, I will tell you in 2 seconds. What is her name? It's either Amy or Sarah. Amy Sherald. Her name is Amy Sherald.
Amy Sherald. Okay, and Kehinde Wiley.
Yeah, so
AKA Kevin.
No. So both clearly African American artists, and not just both African American artists. Kehinde is pretty well known in the hip hop, and amongst hip hop and young black people. Like he had an exhibit at the Brooklyn Museum maybe 2 years ago, and he's done some stuff with artists over the years. Amy is a little less known, but the thing about both of them is, all artists make statements, but they specifically try to use their art to obviously speak towards social justice issues and just kind of like a black empowerment. Kehinde takes an old kind of Baroque style and plugs black people into it, but also adds modern elements in it.
Yeah, a lot of modern. So, both of them are very modern in different ways.
Right, so it could be like, so you, in a Kehinde painting, you could have somebody that looks like an 18th century, you know, baron on a horse, but he might have on like an Adidas jacket. Like, I'm exaggerating, but not really. You know, like that type of shit. So with Amy, and this was the critique, a lot of people didn't like Michelle's painting because they were like, it don't look like her. They don't look, and it's washed out. Amy paints in grayscale. She only paints black people, but she paints in grayscale because she is making an argument against color and race being the same thing. So her thing is like, I'm going to take away the quote unquote blackness of this black to emphasize that me being a black person is not about me being like brown or black of skin. Right.
Okay.
So, once I knew that and looked at some of her other work, it gave me a different eye for Michelle's portrait and actually really made me appreciate like the decision. Cause you got to know like Barack and Michelle both went into this knowing exactly which artist they were choosing and why. So I was like, all right, that's cool. I get it. You know, cause at first I was also like, I don't love it, but you know, we want these shits to look like Polaroids and they not like it's art, you know, and it's hot and it's fine. It's fine art too at that. So
yeah, I really like them both. You know, when somebody says something about the Obama painting that I actually agree with, I do wish he was standing as opposed to sitting. But but I do like, you know, the greenery behind him and the flowers and all that. Like, it's just, especially when you put the painting next to theirs. I saw a picture of like the last
thing.
Like,
it's
crazy. Cause it's like, it's so different. Like,
but from I think anybody else's. But let me just chime in. I don't think that's the official White House painting.
It's not the White House painting.
It's not
the painting that, but it is the official painting that will hang in the National Gallery. There is a different. So there are the official presidential paintings that hang in the National Gallery, and then there are official presidential paintings that hang in the White House. But my understanding is the ones that are in the White House are commissioned by, I don't think they're commissioned by Barack and Michelle. I think they're commissioned by somebody else.
There's a national portraitist or something.
Right. But the ones that hang, so the ones that hang in the National Gallery are actually commissioned by the subjects, but the ones that hang in the White House are out of their control.
So the ones that they got done, those ones are going to be in his place in Chicago.
No. In the National Gallery of the Smithsonian in D.C. The National Gallery.
They're there now.
They're there now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they went
I thought they were going to be in the Presidential Library in Chicago. Oh.
No, they're in the National Gallery in D.C.
Oh, shit. All right. I got to take me right down D.C. Go and see some pictures and shit. Right. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that there was another one being done later.
Right. But the National Gallery does have a it's still a Hall of Presidents. Like it's still other it's still all the other presidential portraits. It's just there's two different everybody also has a different portrait that hangs in the White House.
I got you. All right, cool. What'd you think about him, bro?
I didn't like him. But you know, I'm an old uncultured nigga from the projects in Brooklyn. So you know what do I know? I mean,
listen, my nephew could have did shit.
Nah. I did. Let me be on a serious note. I really did like the president's picture. I thought it was bright. I thought it captured him. When I realized that it was not the official portrait, then I looked at it with a different eye. Okay. I liked it. I did not like the Michelle painting. There's nothing that's going to necessarily make me like it, but I'm not, it's like weird, right? Like I'm not mad. I don't think it's the worst thing ever or the person did something bad. I just don't like
it.
It's like if you say you don't like something, you know, you uncultured swine, right? Like, it's like, nigga,
You don't like it. Yeah, whatever, nigga.
But I'm just, yeah, it's like, whatever, nigga, I don't like it. What the fuck?
Nigga, I don't like mustard on my bologna sandwich. Yeah. God damn it, so I don't like it. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because, it was a good moment this week and another good black moment of the week, you know?
Yeah.
So next week we'll talk in depth about Black Panther and a bunch of other shit.
I can't wait. Black people, it is International Black People Show the Fuck Out Weekend. I am here for it. They are acting up in the theaters already, and I'm loving it.
You saw that picture I sent you all, that nigga dressed up like James Earl Jones and Kanye.
I had already seen it on Twitter. Like, there's another picture. Your man was walking in. I don't know if they had a buffet table in the lobby, but your man was walking in with two uncovered plates into the movie theater. I was like, are they serving chicken in the lobby? Like, I don't know what's happening.
As you should.
Off the chain. Yeah.
You know. So we'll see y'all next week.
All right.
Later.
Good holiday.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.